Povmetia daf mem tet amud bet and nun amud aleph and amud bet. Exploitation ha ona'a shtutla mikach. I think this is a whole sugya that gets into the second part of Perek HaZahav, which deals with the principle of ona'a, which we will define. We've spoken about the fact that we can't renege on deals, even when those deals are not contractually binding, and how serious it is. And we've talked about the fact that in some ways it's even more damaging to society when people act without integrity in business than when people actually commit crimes. Today we're going to talk about situations where you're absolutely allowed to renege. You're absolutely allowed to get out of a deal, even if it is contractually binding. So the Perek HaZahav moves from the point at which a contract becomes binding, feeling morally bound even if it isn't legally binding, to being able to break a contract, even if it is legally binding. And I refer you back to our opening shiur of Seder Nezikin at the beginning of Bava Kamma, where we had the Rav Yehuda saying, Man deboy lemevi chasido, if somebody wants to be a person of great character and piety, then yisasek bemili de Nezikin, he should learn Nezikin, he should learn the laws of commerce as we're learning. And we've been looking at the interface between commerce and character, between faith and business. And it's important as we learn these sugyas for you to bear in mind that young Jewish boys soon after their bar mitzvah are learning these pieces of Gemara. Just think about that as you go through. Long before they come into contact with business, before they handle money, they're learning these principles of Gemara. And that's why it's quite heartbreaking to me when I hear people say, you know, nowadays young boys don't have a head for Gemara, we should teach them Chumash and Tanakh, perhaps a little bit of Mishnayos, and we deprive them of being formed, of their character being formed on these pages of Gemara that we're learning at the moment, where you're looking at the overlap of business and faith and spirituality and halakha and the laws of the Torah, which are so terribly important. One of the feelings that are most difficult for us to tolerate is a feeling that, I think it was on the first day I was in Israel, I was taught that Israelis will do anything for you. They have hearts of gold, as long as they don't feel exploited and taken advantage of. And there's a special word for it, as you know, in Israel. You don't want to be a friar. You don't want to be somebody who's taken advantage of. As long as an Israeli feels you appreciate them, you value them, you can get amazing kindness out of an Israeli. We're seeing it at these times. But it's not just Israeli. Nobody wants to feel exploited. It's one of the worst feelings that the human being can feel. It's actually literally soul-destroying, and we'll see why. So our Mishnah talks about ona'a. Let's translate ona'a as exploitation. And where do we find ona'a? One of the areas where ona'a is most frequent is in business, that you can exploit people in business. And what is ona'a? Shtut lamikach. If you overcharge somebody more than a sixth of its value or of its price, discussions is exactly what that means. That's called ona'a. Ad matay mutar lachzir. So from what point is the buyer allowed to renege on the contract? Ad kadei shiyireh letagar o likrovo. He has the time. It's reasonable for him to go and show what he's bought to his friends or relatives or to an expert and get expert opinion. And when people start saying, no, you overpaid for that, he can go into it, find out what the true value is. And if the value is more than a sixth less than what he paid, he can get out of the deal, he can return the object, or he can demand to have that portion of his money returned to him. Ibailu, the Gemara then goes into it, pachot mishtut l'rabban l'alter hu mechilo b'chdei shiyireh l'tagaro l'krovo. We get introduced into the idea of mechila, that the reason that less than a sixth is not exploitation is not because it's not exploitative. It's just because if it's a very small price difference, people usually let it go. It's okay. So I overpaid for it. It's okay. But there's a point at which we don't feel it. There's a point at which we feel exploited. But this is not just a law of contracts. This is not just a question of when you can get out of a deal and when you can consider yourself having been exploited. Because we see that the source of all of this are the psukim in Parshas Behar. So there are isurim involved in this. This is also, there are transgressions involved in this. Hashem says, don't do this. This is not just between two human beings. This is transgressing a principle of the Torah. Where do we see that? V'chitim keru mem kar la'amitecha or kano miyad amitecha. We've been working with this posuk all the way through Perek Hazov. This posuk is the common theme that threads through the whole Perek. If you sell something to your friend, or you buy from the hand of your friend, and we talked about metaltelin and so on, al tonu ish et achiv, you dare not oppress your brother. Be cautious, be careful. And then the Torah goes on to say, we're talking about a field that you sell, because when you sell a field in Eretz Yisrael, you really are selling the output of the field. So the Torah introduces us again. Think of it that a 14-year-old child starts learning this, the difference between an asset and a commodity. A metaltin is a commodity. A field is a business. A field generates revenue. And you value property by the revenue it's capable of generating. And that's how we value property till today. You value property by the revenue it's capable of generating. And with fields in Israel, when the Yovel comes, the field goes back to the original owner. So the revenue capable of being generated by a field is determined not only by the quality of the field and the position of the field, but also by how long, by the timing, how long it is to the Yovel. Because if it's 5 years before the Yovel, you've only got 5 years of revenue that you can get from the field, and that will affect the capital value of the field when it is traded. And so you've got to take that into consideration when you sell your field, says the Torah. Then after that, the Torah says, "V'lo tonu ish tamito," once again, "and do not oppress your friend." "V'yareta me'elokecha," you should have yiras shamayim. A businessman has to have yiras shamayim. It's not just good to be a mensch. It's not just good to be a person of integrity. You also need Yerushalayim. You need to be a God-fearing person to be able to not exploit people in business. Ki ani Hashem Elokechem, because I am God, the Lord your God, says the Ibn Ezra. Why does it say V'lo tonu twice? That's the big question on this piece of Chumash. Why does it say you shall not oppress twice? Says the Ibn Ezra, one for the mocher, one for the koneh. It's not just the seller that mustn't oppress the buyer, but the buyer mustn't oppress the seller either. If either one has knowledge that reveals that the value of the item being sold, property in this case, is more than the price or less than the price, that has to be put on the table. You can't keep that information to your to yourself and trade on information which the other person doesn't have. And we see that the idea in the United States, there's a principle of buyer beware. If you're buying something, it's your job to do your research. You can't blame the seller for not giving you all the information. We see in the Torah that's not so. Both buyer and seller have to work together to make sure that the deal is based on disclosed information. And the reason that there's a difference in price is because it's worth more to me than it is to you. You need cash, I need a field, and therefore I'm willing to pay more than you see the value for it, and so we do a deal. Not because I know something about the field that you don't know. That's already oppressing somebody. Imagine how many deals that cuts out. Just this principle. Why? Ki ani Hashem Elokechem v'achash ani Elokei Shnechem. Because I am the God of both of you. You both have one God. And you're both going to sit in front of me at one stage. And we're going to evaluate the ethics of this deal. And I will take payment from anybody who has exploited their friend. The Sforno goes further. All we're really doing today is just understanding the principle. It's an introduction to the principle of ona'ah. Says the Sforno. Be careful what we're saying. When you sell, in no deal should there ever be a case of exploitation. Don't put your good wares at the top or in the shop window so that people come to buy, but what they actually get is not of the same quality as what they saw. Don't do that, because that's called gonev et ha'ayin. You're stealing the sight of a person, you're stealing the eyes, you're using vision to mislead people. Sometimes the seller doesn't fully appreciate the value of what he's selling. You, the buyer, you know something that he doesn't know. Says the Sforno, make sure to disclose that. It's not fair to deal with it. It's exploitative to use that information to deal. I says the Sforno, we learned back on Daf Mem Zayin, only three or four Daf previously, that when it comes to karka, Rabbi Yochanan said, when it comes to fixed property, there's no onah, there's no overpayment. You can't overpay for property. Says the Sibur Mikol Makom, nevertheless, even by property there is. Explains the Ramban, Shevadai ha-ma'anet chaviru la'dat over belav bein b'metaltenin bein b'karkaot. Ona'a is not just a matter of commercial contract and an issue of whether you can renege or not, whether you can ask for your money back or not, whether you can recover the price difference or not. That's one piece of ona'a which our Gemara deals with. But there's also an isur of ona'a, ha-over belav, there's a transgression of ona'a. And that transgression applies not only to metaltelin. Even the Rabbi Yochanan says, "Ein ona'a bekarkaot." He doesn't mean there is no prohibition of ona'a in property. He means that you, on the commercial side, you can't reclaim, you can't renege on ona'a by property, and we'll see why. But certainly, it's prohibited to overcharge for property as well. Our Rabbeinu chidshu ona'a tashlumim b'shtut ha-mekach u'bitul mekach b'yoter mishtut. In our Gemara, Yandav Memtet Nun Nun Aleph, we learn the principle that if you overcharge by a sixth, then you've got to compensate the person, give the money back. If you've overcharged more than a sixth, the other person can cancel the contract altogether, can return the goods. Umizeh bivad miatu akarkaot. And it's only from that piece that Chazal excluded fixed property. Lefisha ona'a bahem afilu b'yeter mishtut. Because there ona'a applies there even more than a shtut mechila. There's mechila meaning. The issue around less than a sixth or more than a sixth is about whether the buyer forgoes it. And says, okay, so I overpaid for the gold Rolex. I could have got it a bit cheaper somewhere else. It's okay. And I want it so badly, it's not a big deal. But when it comes to property, even if it's more than a sixth, people forgo it. Why is that so? Explains the Klei Yakar on the next page. Because in the case of Karka, lo yimaleit shiyavo hazman shitiye nimkeret b'oto erech shu kone ota achshav. Because when it comes to property, the supply is permanently limited. The demand is permanently growing. So sooner or later, you're going to get your money back. Property is just a matter of waiting it out. It's a matter of timing. Can you wait it out or not? Do you have the staying power? But you will eventually recover your money. You're never going to go again. Think of it. A 14-year-old boy is learning this Gemara. Nowadays, 14-year-old girls as well are learning these Gemaras before they even enter the whole field of property. They're learning the difference between a growing asset and a declining commodity. Warren Buffett always talked about how important it is to, if you're spending money, spend your money on something that can produce results. If you've got $100 and you're deciding, should I spend it at the restaurant or should I put it into the stock market? Don't just think it's $100. It's not just $100. It's $100 with all the future value. How much is this $100 capable of generating if I invested it? And you say, well, over 20 years, the $100 is $400 or $500. So that's what you're spending on your meal at the restaurant. You're not spending $100, you're spending $500 of potential value. That's his whole principle of life. And that's why he used to fly economy class and drive a battered old Honda. It wasn't because he was miserly, just because he understood money's capacity to generate revenue, and he couldn't spend that potential on something that gets consumed. So the difference between a consumable and an asset is something we learn about. And again, a young child learns these things. And when it comes to property, it's not a consumable asset. It's a growing asset. And if you can sit it out, it will eventually, you'll get that money back. And therefore, people are moichel. Therefore, people are willing to forego any overpayment. I overpaid for the property, okay. Eventually, it'll come back to me. Aval metaltin yesh lachu shema b'oto zman lo yu ba'olam. But if you're buying gold Rolexes, you've got to worry that by the time you can recover the overprice, it might have been stolen, it might have been lost. Who knows if it'll even be in existence? So you might never recover the overpayment. So we're more particular about not overpaying for movable materials than we are for immovables. Once again, the Klei Yakar learns like the Ramban. The only difference between property and movable commodity and movable objects is the ability to renege on the contract. But the issue, the prohibition, that applies with both things. You're not allowed to overcharge, whether for property or for movable property, or for movable objects. Rashi learns the repetition of the word lo tonu differently. Rashi says, in the one pasuk it says, "Al tonu ishet achiv," and the other pasuk says, "Velo tonu ishet amito." A few pasukim away from each other, says Rashi, "Al tonu zu onaat mamon." That's talking about exploiting a person in business. "Velo tonu ishet amito kan his hiral onaat dvarim." That's about exploiting people verbally, exploiting people in relationships. Shelo yaknit et chaviro, and we'll see this further on. Our Perek deals with this as well, that you should not insult somebody. Velo yasienu etza she'eina hogenet, and don't give a person advice that isn't the best advice for them. Lefi darko, ela lefi darko v'hanato shel ze yoetz. You've got to think, put yourself in the other person's position, and make sure that if you're giving advice, you're advising them to do what's best for them, not for anybody else. And if you say, who will know what my intention was? I'm giving advice, and the fact that I'm going to get benefit out of this advice, or the fact that my friend or my children will get benefit out of this advice, who even knows that? Hashem knows. Whenever in the Torah there is a prohibition which nobody can know about, it's not a visible crime, it's an invisible crime. Any of those situations, at the end of the day, God is part of the deal, and you've got to watch that as well. What is the relationship between these two forms of onah? On the one hand, we're talking about overpaying in business. Understand that's exploitation. You have information which the other person doesn't have, and you're exploiting their ignorance. You're trading on their ignorance. That's not what trade is about. Trade is about trading on value, not trading on ignorance. And on the other hand, we're talking about giving a person advice. Somebody says, my son's been offered a shidduch with so-and-so, a marriage opportunity with this young girl. What do you think about it? And you were thinking maybe that your son maybe would marry that girl. And can you keep that out? You've got to be able to keep that out and be able to advise this person for what's right and good for them. That's also onah. What's the difference? What's the relationship between that and overpaying for a field or overcharging for a field? Says the Nesiva Soilom, this is the Maharal Miprag. It's so important. Yesh lecha ladat ki hefresh yesh ben ona'a uvein kasher hu makeh et chaveiro mitzaro. Remember that a 10-year-old, 15-year-old boy learns this Gemara before he goes into the marketplace. Know that there is a difference between hitting somebody, striking somebody physically, and exploiting them. Ki ha'ona'a bifrat hu lenefesh ha'adam asher mekabel ha'onah. Because when you're exploiting somebody, it's not their bank account that you're exploiting. That as well, but that's not the issue. That's not why it's called ona'ah. That would be called geneva or genevat da'at. That's theft. What is ona'ah? Ona'ah is exploiting them and you're damaging their soul. This is a nefesh, a violation of nefesh. This is a crime of the soul. You're just overcharging, you're negotiating a business deal and you're trying to get a little bit extra for your property and you're going over the required limit and you're saying, hey, no, no, but kakot, yes, but that's only about whether you can renege. As far as the prohibition is concerned, there is on the arba kakot. And if you overcharge, you're damaging the soul of the other person, not just the body. Why? This is not affecting the body. Because all cases, v'chol busha hi lenefesh, we'll see further on, onat varim is about shaming somebody. So I understand, onat varim, you're hurting the soul. Any case of shaming, says the Maharal, is damage to the soul of another person. You're undermining their soul. And the soul is in God's hands. God's holding that person's soul, and you're striking the soul while God is holding that soul. That's what's happening when you shame somebody. So I understand that's shaming. But what's that got to do with overpaying, overcharging? Rav Shimshon Rafael Hirsch defines ona'a. Nitan lahagdir et musag ha'ona'a kashimush lera'a b'chulshat chaviro kedei l'ramoto. When you use another person's weakness, whether it's weakness that they're immigrants, they don't know the situation, or you're shaming them, or they don't have information that you have, and you exploit the weakness to their disadvantage, that's ona'a. Exploiting a person's weakness to their disadvantage is ona'ah. And that covers both forms of ona'ah. Whether you're shaming somebody or you're exploiting them in business, it's the same thing. So what is the damage to the soul? If you've overcharged me for the property, I was willing to pay $500,000 or $1 million for the property. So willing to pay it. I find out afterwards the property is only worth $800,000. Fine, so I overpay. Question of whether I can renege on it or not. But why is it damage to my soul? I'm angry with you. I'm upset. I'm resentful. But why is it damage to my soul? Because I feel like a friar. I trusted you and you abused my trust. And that's damage to the soul. That is soul destroying. When you put your trust in somebody, trust is something we have naturally. We're born trusting. Children are born trusting. We lose trust as we go through life. Trusting, bitochen, when Hashem says trust in me, he's not asking me to do something supernatural. I gave you an instinct of trust. I gave you an intuition of trust. Keep it and use it correctly. And we start trusting people and children start trusting and then they get hurt. They get abused. When you've abused a person's trust, you've damaged their soul, not just damaged their bank account. You've damaged their soul. When a person feels like a friar, it's his soul that feels shamed. He feels inadequate. He feels undermined. It's a terrible feeling because of all the bad feelings we can have. The feeling of having had our trust exploited is one of the most soul-destroying feelings a human being can endure.